Hello and welcome back to Millennial 8, and I'm now here with Golden Age Man. Now, I should say that a lot of people asked me to invite Golden Age Man onto Millennial this year, and there were lots of people very keen to see him. I that's not the only reason I invited him on, of course, but still, this isn't quite an anticipated stream, so thank you. First of all, thank you for agreeing to appear. Sorry, everyone, about the delay. The previous stream went on a bit, but we're here now. So, Golden Age Man, welcome to Millennial.
Yeah, thank you. Really, really grateful to be here. And that's some really nice words you said. I'm very flattered that so many people reached out and asked me to come on. Like, when I started making videos, really, I only started doing them just because it helped me organize my own thoughts. And I found that talking to a camera and like recording it helped me get, it was like talking my way to the answer and I could get my own thoughts straight. And I thought, I'll put these online. You know, why not? I might as well send them to a couple of friends. And that they became quite popular. And I ended up, had a lot of people like commenting and saying that they liked it and they liked what I had to say. And all sorts of really nice things. So it's actually been like a really interesting journey for me.
It's funny because it's the same with me. It's very similar. It's a strange thing that sometimes a channel, a YouTube channel, Odyssey channel, whatever, almost starts by accident. You know, I certainly didn't think that I would be successful at it. I had no idea. And I didn't start it with that in mind. I just thought, I want to meet like-minded people and I want to talk through. And I found, I sort of found by accident that I enjoyed talking to a camera and about a topic just for like quite concise, one thing for 15, 20, 25 minutes. And then you find out that you're good at it and other people enjoy it. And, but it was a similar thing as with you, where it's a very good way of, because when there's another person, when you're talking to another person, they keep intervening and interrupting. Whereas when it's just you talking to a camera, you can sort of find your way to the destination in your own time, turning over the correct stones along the way, the ones that you don't want to neglect. So,
yeah, absolutely. Therapeutic. I started making them shortly after sort of March 2020 when the COVID lockdowns happened, because that was like a real shock to me, because that revealed like something very profound about how the world worked that I was completely wrong about. You know, I had a very deep misunderstanding of like how the world worked, how power worked. And I was under the mistaken impression that I was existing in a world of people that thought roughly like me and, you know, and roughly in the same manner that I think. And obviously that was proven completely wrong, because I saw people believing utterly bizarre nonsense and then forcing that insanity on everyone else. And so I kind of had to take a step back and be like, okay, the model with which I've been navigating this world and understanding other people is clearly wrong. So I need to start thinking through like what is exactly is happening here and what I was wrong about. So, you know, I started making videos about it, and people seem to like it.
Yeah, that is a scary thing when you realize how out of step you are with everyone else, with the general public.
I felt like reality had split in two. That was my feeling on it. I felt, and I was in a reality where I could see clearly that there was no serious threat from any kind of virus. It was a load of nonsense. And the masks were obviously ludicrous. And this was just massively inconveniencing my life. And yet other people saw, they were literally living in a different reality. It was like they saw a different world than what I was seeing. To them, it was real. The virus was lurking behind every corner, just waiting to jump out and attack them. You know, they were terrified of other people. I had a lady scream at me on the plane. I decided I'm kind of a bit of a rebellious sort of person. I don't like being told what to do and I don't like being controlled. So I actually traveled a lot during COVID. I went through sort of five or six different countries. There's actually a whole series of me on YouTube with, if you look up Sterling Cooper, who's one of my friends, I did a travel vlog through Europe in the height of COVID. And we had to fake papers, and we almost got arrested twice because I refused to wear a mask anywhere. And I had people screaming at me about it. Like, I remember walking around the streets of some cities in Spain, Salamanca, I think it's called, and like one other one. And there were police out on patrol, making sure that everyone was wearing a mask. And they would come up to us and be like, no, you have to wear a mask. And I'm like, no hablo español. I'm English. Hi, how are you doing? Like, playing the fool, right? So they, I actually speak perfect Spanish, but I pretended that I didn't understand what they were saying. And I'm like, oh, I'm English. Hi, how are you doing? Lovely to meet you. Like the bumbling Englishman abroad sort of stereotype, which is common enough that it actually works, by the way. If you ever get in trouble with the police on the continent, do the bumbling Englishman abroad, like effervescent confidence, really happy, like really pleased to see them, don't understand a word they're saying. And they'll just be like, oh my goodness, this idiot. And they'll leave you alone. And that actually happened to us twice.
That's very good. So, I'll go that in mind.
But so I traveled through a bunch of different countries, but what I noticed was that every country was doing the same thing. So I'm like, hold on a second. I thought there were all these different countries in the world, but they're in lockstep. They're all doing the exact same thing. Just they give their like tiny little regional spin. So like in Germany, they're like a color system. In Morocco, they're like a number system. But the levels were the same, like the COVID alert levels or whatever nonsense. And I was like, okay, well, clearly my understanding of the world was wrong. I thought that countries were mostly sovereign. They're obviously not. I can see this because of observation in my eyes. So that kind of kicked off a whole thought process where I'm like, all right, I am much more vulnerable than I thought I was. The masses, it turns out, are very dangerous because they'll literally do whatever the TV tells them to do, regardless if there's any logic to it. So these people are dangerous. You have to wear, I had to wear a mask or... Most of the time, I got away with not wearing one, but sometimes they wouldn't let you in a supermarket if you weren't wearing a mask. And that means if you don't wear a mask, then you can't eat. And if you can't eat, then you starve to death. Yeah, that's serious.
There was a point, and I can't remember when, and this would differ from one country to another, but there was a point when they were saying that, and it was like, okay, so what if I don't want to do... And then, of course, they were saying there was the prospect at one point that... The vaccine's going to be mandatory. So if you aren't vaccinated, and there's going to be the vax pass, the COVID pass. So if you aren't vaccinated and this supermarket has the policy, then, and of course, you can't say that it's your civil rights or whatever because it's a private company and they don't care. So,
And the other thing is that previously I was thinking, oh, there's all these different supermarkets. I'm really diversified, right? But it turns out that every single one just followed the rules. So do you really have you don't. It's all the same thing. It's all the same system, which I call the regime. Like, it's all the same thing. So, if they can make you wear a mask to be allowed to buy food, they can make you do anything. And people have forgotten that. I was going through a Twitter thread just today of, images from when COVID was a big thing. People have forgotten this, that... They filled up this arena in LA with sand to stop people going there. Police were arresting people for walking their dogs. Random strangers would scream at you for not wearing masks. Like, it was truly insane stuff. People have forgotten already. People have goldfish brain. I kind of looked at this and I'm like, okay, I need to figure out how to cover my bases because it's exactly this kind of utter nonsense. People wearing, bubbles on their heads. Like, do you remember that? It's just such crazy stuff. I kind of sort of sat down because I'm quite a logical minded person. I'm like quite strategic minded. I've done a lot of combat sports and things like that. So I think about this and try to think about these things in a logical way. Yeah, there's
one of these with I wanted to come up with an example just to illustrate.
There's
what
that
you were
one guy.
There.
There's that one guy who's blowing a tuba and like inside the tent, and he can like barely fit in it. He's like looking up like this. It's so funny.
I've got it. There it is.
Do you remember, man? People have forgotten how insane normal people went. And it's funny, but it's also terrifying because if they can go insane enough to do this, there's a lot of things they can go insane enough to do. And whoever controls the talk box in the corner controls the masses. And the masses are the ones that are in the supermarket. They're the ones that serve your food. They're the ones that drive your Ubers. They're the ones that fly your planes. These are these same types of people.
just one more. This was the image that I wanted to show. That I just took me a minute to find it. But this is for when people try to remember how insane things got during COVID. Here's an image that I think really sums it up.
Oh, my goodness.
This was in, I think, Germany. And this is what they've done to discourage people, or rather make it impossible for people to sit in a park.
Insane, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Absolutely incredible.
I was actually in Germany as well. It was one of the countries I was in. And that was one, that was the worst one. Germany was the worst. It's a full, or it was a full on prison system.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, you couldn't go to the gym without your COVID vaccine, you know, and every single person was like, they were zealous about it. I remember thinking there, I'm like, when I was in Germany, I'm like, oh, this explains a lot about what happened in the whole period from like 1920 through 1940. Like, I'm looking at how these German people are just like snapping into line. It's and following every authority, and they do it like with an almost religious fervor.
It does seem to come quite naturally to them. They're far more of a collectivistic people than the British, for example.
Yeah.
But with Britain, it's different though, because it's, you know, we've got a similar thing though. It's like we're very bureaucratic. There are people among the British population who love implementing petty little rules.
These types of people are everywhere, aren't they? The bureaucrats. I mean, you can just look at the Soviet Union. They had plenty of these types of people. And they love it. They love it when stuff like this comes out, because they get their chance to enforce their petty worldview on everyone. It's a sort of artificial sense of power that they have. You know, so that like, I'm a practical minded man. So when this happened, I'm like, okay, well, I don't like this, and I don't want to be dependent on these people, and I want to be told what to do. So what can I do to insulate myself from this nonsense? Because it's happened once, and it can happen again. And I think it probably will happen again for a whole number of reasons. And that started my whole journey towards like self-sufficiency, self-reliance, homesteading, and a lot of this sort of thing, which you already have the Woodlander on, who I really respect and I like. I think he's great. And you know, that's the sort of type of solution that I end up coming to. And I noticed that a lot of people independently, because it's actually like lots of people came to the same place independently, which is really interesting when that happens, because it, to me, it indicates a kind of collective cultural unconsciousness at work. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I think there are a lot of people who wouldn't have been natural allies before 2020 who came together because of this.
Thomas Sowell calls it the hippies and the Nazis.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, that's obviously exaggerating it slightly, but basically. You've got this situation where people who would ordinarily be possibly at each other's throats are instead uniting against something. Now, I don't know how successful that was, because the regime proved to be extremely resourceful. And another thing that was scary was how good they were at thwarting any attempts at organizing against them.
Yeah,
that really disappointed me. So I wish that we'd got better at it.
Well, it speaks to a fundamental misunderstanding that we had about the nature of power. And, you know, you were actually active in the sort of, let's say, dissident right or right-wing political sphere much earlier than I was. I was sort of like thrust into it by COVID, because that, you know, I could mostly get by just like doing my own thing and just ignoring it up until then. But COVID intruded so much. I can't deal with this. And then especially because I had a baby girl and I started to think about what kind of world she'd be growing up in, and it made me, you know, but you were in it much longer. But so looking back at the rise of populism in 2016 and the Trump and everything, and I heard you speak with Morgoth about this, I think it seemed hopelessly naive. It was a complete misunderstanding of how power really worked. And a really good book on this, which will debunk, I hate to use that word because it's been captured now, hasn't it? It's sort of like dispel the illusions, let's say, is Nima Parvini's The Populist Illusion. Actually, I have two copies of it in my bookshelf there, because I got three and I want to give away two because it's really good. And it's a short book, so you know, even if you don't like reading, you can get through it. And Pete Quinones did an audio book version, so you can listen to it if you want. And it's, I recommend everyone listen to that, The Populist Illusion by Nima Parvini. And I know he sounds foreign, but he is English. And he like wrote this book about it, and it's totally explained everything about the nature of how power works. Like populism basically cannot work because the masses, like, unless they have a leader, like a small group of elites leading them and then using the mass as a sort of wielding the mass, they're effectively completely useless because that, you know, the small group of elite can completely dispel the masses and mix them up and make it chaos. And the masses have no idea what they're doing and they're fickle and it's like sort of fluid and it gets pushed apart really easily. And I saw this in a very visceral way because I went to a protest in London when I was still in London or still in England in 2020. That's sort of like July, I think August. I went with one of my friends to a anti-lockdown protest and I saw the police there. And I saw with my own eyes, not like a Telegram video, I saw this. I saw police picking off weak people from the crowd. I saw them pulling out old men. I saw them pulling out women. 8-10 police officers, they'd go in the crowd, pick out a weak one, pull them out, put them on the ground and beat them with truncheons. I saw the English police do this and I couldn't believe it. And what I also saw was that despite the fact we had tens of thousands of people, it was completely ineffective because there was no leadership, no organization, no strategy, no tactics, nothing. So a much smaller number of organized police were able to completely disperse and run, run counter tactics against that demonstration. So it was useless. The protests accomplished very, very little. They're effectively useless.
See, this is the thing. Whenever you fall foul of or come into disagreement with the government or whatever, they have far more experience of dealing with people like you than you have experience of opposing power. So they have decades and decades of experience of what to do with a protest, what to do with a bunch of people who are rowdy. Well, here we go.
It's actually not that difficult to control a crowd if the crowd lacks discipline and leadership. Now, if you've got you can do far more with a disciplined group of 100 men with good leadership than you can with an undisciplined, leaderless crowd of 1 million. Like, look at what happened on Jan 6th. Hopeless. Hopeless. Why? Because Trump refused to lead because he wasn't the man that we thought he was. So that... like numbers alone are not enough. And you're absolutely right. They have a lot of experience dealing with this. And what's more is that there's multiple lines of defense stacked up. Before you even get to the protest, people's fundamental worldview is wrong. People think that the way, and this is really the summary of the populist delusion, people think the way that power works is you get enough people that want something and they demand it and then the politicians do what they want, right? It completely backwards. That's not how power works at all. Power works is a small group of elite decide what's going to happen, and then they manufacture consent so it looks like there's a mass support for it. That's what BLM is. That's what the civil rights, race riots of the 1960s America were. That's what Extinction Rebellion is. Yes. It's astroturfed. So it's manufactured consent, but people end up looking at that and getting a mistaken idea of how power works. They think, oh, if we just organize, it's like cargo culting. It's like, oh, if we just copy what they do, we'll get the same result. No, you won't, because you don't have elites in power. So, and I think that whole process from like this sort of kind of energetic but naive energy of 2016, 2017, they have Brexit and that kind of thing, and gave way to a sort of cold realization that that strategy cannot work because reality isn't set up how you thought you were, how you thought it is, and your position on the chessboard is far worse than what you thought it was.
Yeah, and I think this is actually played out by both of the things that ironically gave us confidence in 2016, Brexit and Trump. Brexit, you think, oh, well, there it is, the popular will. It's worked. Now we're going to get Brexit. Well, we haven't really got Brexit, certainly not in any way that would matter. Any way that, and apparently the Tories are now looking at reversing.
It's just got gummed up into the wheels of bureaucracy and just gone nowhere.
Exactly,
really.
Exactly. It hasn't gone anywhere, and Britain doesn't feel free today in a way that, like.
In fact, I think you have more migrants into Britain in 2021 than any other year previously. Exactly. So it's got worse. Exactly. It's got much worse.
Exactly, because within the elite, there isn't a group that is pro Brexit. It just doesn't happen. I mean, that's why they had to be sort of pressured into giving that referendum in the first place. But then with the other one, Trump, okay, popular will got him voted, got him into power. Yes. but then he screwed it up because he refused to organize against his enemies. In fact, he even invited his enemies to organize for him.
Trump is a salesman. He's very good at saying what people want to hear, but he doesn't have balls. He's actually a coward. You know, and he wasn't ready to. If you had had a different man there at that time, you could have had a very different outcome. And the left knew this, which is why they were so hysterical about it. But Trump fumbled it because he was fundamentally a coward and he wasn't willing to do what needed to be done in that moment. He could have done it. He could have had a million men go wherever he told them to go, and he did nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, he's talking now. Just we might as well go into this since it's come up. He's saying that. Let's see if I can find this. Somebody shared it yesterday. Trump's he's got this proposal for what he's going to do if he gets in 2024, ban the social media companies from censorship and from deplatforming people.
Nobody
and all
should
that.
Be taking this guy seriously.
This is the problem.
He had his chance, he failed.
Yeah, for 4 years he did really nothing. I mean, I people say, well, he stops America going to war with Syria. Maybe that's true. But that's if he did do that, then that's all he did in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it's depressing. You know,
It isn't, Colin, because like one of the actual, I think there's actually a tremendous benefit coming out of all this, which is that people are finally realizing that no one is coming to save them. It doesn't matter like who gets voted into the White House at this point. Even if you had fair elections, even if you did get someone in there, I don't think it'd make any dang difference because the system is so, the entire regime is so arrayed against an outsider that they'll never let anyone in, number one. And even if you did, the only type of person that can get there is the type of person that is going to get absorbed into the system. This is the same for all the standard politics. This is what is meant by there's no political solution. Like you said, yeah, okay, you can be depressed and blackpilled about that, but there's a alternative path, which is taking full personal responsibility and saying, okay, no one is coming to save me. I have no friends in high places, and I don't think we really do, frankly. The chessboard is arrayed against me in a manner much worse than what I thought it was. And there's a German word which I think perfectly describes this. It's called Zugzwang. And Zugzwang in chess is when you're in a position where you have to make a move, but the enemy is in such a good position that every move you make is bad, right? You're forced to move, but none of the moves like are really that good. So what do you do in that situation? You just pick the best possible move. That's all you can do, and that's the best thing to do. So the situation we're in is we have a lot of political forces arrayed against us, and I think we have no realistic chance of making it, like the system's broken. The system is broken. The whole system is rotten. So this presents an opportunity, which is to walk away from it and realize that you can be sovereign and you can have an outsized impact on things locally. Stop thinking that putting a bit of paper in a box every 4 years is all you need to do, because that is the exact thinking that paralyzed our fathers and grandfathers for the last century or so. That's the exact type of thinking that got us here, is thinking, oh, if I just get the right person in, it'll solve all the problems. It doesn't solve the problems, because the problem is that people are not willing to step up and actually do anything themselves. And that's where it has to come from now.
I see what you're saying, and I agree with you. But what do you think people should do? I mean, when you say that people mm-hmm. should do things for themselves, what should they do for themselves?
Yeah, so I want to be clear. People mistake me for being a hyper-individualist, and that's not the case, because I think one man alone is very easily picked off. I'm very much in favor of networking locally with like-minded men that think like you. And if you have a family, if you have a wife and a child like I do, then you know, other family men as well. And working towards, no matter in what small way, working towards having some degree of sovereignty and independence from the beast system. Because I've come to believe now that the system is too rotten to be fixed for the most part. And it's also collapsing from the, like, when you have an ideology that declares war on competence, which is what the regime has done. People call these people elites. I mean, I actually don't like that word. We can call them the ruling class. There's nothing elite about these people. Like, they're not that intelligent. They're not that smart. Like, they're not – all they have is inherited this sort of machinery of power from much more intelligent men that came before them. Like, these people are not that smart. You can see by how, like, what a fuck-up the ADL is doing at the moment. They're making themselves look so bad. And it's almost like they're sabotaging themselves because they're idiots. Like, they're just not very smart. So the regime has declared war on competence. They've declared war on white men particularly, partly because white men tend to be really competent. I know this. I work in software engineering. And large companies cannot get software built because as soon as a company reaches a certain size, they go full diversity hiring and they just hire people just for being black or being a tranny or whatever. And they can't do the job, really. So they just end up like gumming up and they can't ship anything. You're seeing now that they're hiring like black trans lesbians to be plane pilots and things like that. Like the system is collapsing. Okay. And it's a very, very complex system.
Yeah, well, let me just put it in there because a lot of people say, well, those who are really in charge, those who are really in power, aren't incompetent. The visible people like Justin Trudeau, Jacinda Ardern, Boris Johnson, mm-hmm. they are useful. They are just sort of idiots, puppets. But the people who are really in charge are competent. And I'm honestly not sure if that's true. I dare say there are more competent people behind the scenes than the people we see. Mm-hmm. That would seem logical, especially given how incompetent the people we see are. but I don't believe that. Well, okay, I'm open to what you're saying, that the people who really are in power are not actually that competent because they do seem to be destroying their own power base, even with mass immigration. I mean, even the choice to import massive numbers of people who are not going to make your own society more like the society that they are in charge.
They're getting high on their own supply. That's what it's doing. Like they believe their own bullshit. And I think that, you know, sometimes the golem has gotten out of control, right? You've got this enormous structure of midwit managers that control everything who really buy into this like equity, inclusion, diversity, anti-white ideology. They actually believe it. And so they will do these paradoxical things like the definition. One definition of stupidity is doing something that hurts someone else and also hurts you. And it's hard to understand these people because you're like, if you're a sane person, you'd be like, why would anyone do that? Because they're stupid. Like, that's why they're doing it. Like, of course, it's going to lead to destruction for the country and for them. Because they're stupid, right? I was going to say something else, but I forgot. What was I just talking about?
Yeah. I think I interrupted you when you were saying that they are not that bright and that they are destroying their own society.
I think there's also a tendency to believe there's going to be some sort of big collapse and it's all going to be Mad Max. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be gradual, a gradual degradation. It's just going to be worse. You're going to have brownouts and there's going to be, and the regime will respond by becoming increasingly desperate and increasingly controlling. But on the other hand, you can just step out of that. And that's kind of what I advocate doing, is trying to insulate yourself from the regime. I believe it's like a mad beast. It's a Leviathan. It's like a big elephant and it's dying and it's thrashing around. Okay. Just cause it's dying doesn't mean it's not dangerous. It's actually more dangerous. So the safest path, the best path is to get a safe distance away and watch it with, keep one eye open on it and watch it warily from a distance and watch it thrash itself to death. You don't need to do anything to accelerate the decline of the regime. They're taking undefendable positions on a whole number of topics. I'm here in America, which is a bit more, even more extreme than England in some ways. Like the tranny gay thing here is just ridiculous. Like the regime is like full defending like child molestation and things like that. It's an undefendable position, but they're clinging to it.
And this is the thing with the like trans admirals, trans majors in the army and all that. How can you maintain, and this is a key question, how can you maintain a functional army if the people at senior positions of it are not the most stable people?
You can't. I've talked to multiple people here, like locals to this area. Like I live in Kentucky, right? It's real like old school, colonial, very white kind of area. Very patriotic people, I would say. But I've spoken to multiple people people that have said, we were a military family. You know, we've had a history of service going back 200 years. And this is the first generation that is not going to join the military. Many, many, many cases like that. Young white men are not interested in joining the military anymore. What happens to your country when your best fighters, your best people are not interested in joining the military? The regime is doing a great job filtering for us because they're kicking out all the kinds of people that we would actually want. These are all the people that you actually want. And you've got hundreds of thousands, millions of young men who feel completely rejected by the regime. They feel hated by the regime. They feel nothing in common with the regime. They don't want anything to do with it. And they're looking for an alternative. And you're blackpilled? Name one time in the past 70 years where that's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does seem like the mainstream is destined to fall apart one way or the other, because I just don't see how it's sustainable. I guess the issue is you want there to be something ready to take over when the time is right.
You do. You do. But so you need to build up from scratch. And I think that's where people really get stuck on taking action on this, because they take a look outside of the lens of like, all right, this is how I live. I go to work, I go to the supermarket, I come back to my apartment, whatever. They took a look outside at the actual scale of the task ahead of us. And it looks so daunting. It looks so gargantuan that they sort of mentally recoil from that and go back into their comfort zone, whatever that is. And for a lot of our guys, unfortunately, that is consuming content online, playing video games, writing epic rants about how awesome your based Fourth Reich is going to be, or whatever it is, going online and trolling people and all this stuff, because that's comfortable. And then you feel like you're in control then, but you actually haven't taken any action to separate yourself from this system. So you're actually still completely dependent on the system. And you cannot fight something you're dependent on. This is a very, very key realization that I had. If you are dependent on the system is your master. It owns you. It doesn't matter how free you what you post online, how free you think you are. When the social credit score comes and they track everything, and they will do because they'll get desperate and controlling, and you get your social credit score card dinged for points because you said something the regime didn't like online, and now you can't buy groceries. How long do you think that you're going to hold out against it? No, you'll fold immediately. It's very hard to have principles when your enemy controls your source of food, your housing, your electricity. You can't. So if you want to, it seemed to me an incredibly obvious, and it still seems incredibly obvious, that if you want to resist this thing, you have to not be dependent on it. And I think there's a path to that for everyone. I really do. Everyone can do it. And one of the things that really kept me going making videos, because whenever you'll know this, Colin, is that whenever you put yourself out there online honestly and you speak your mind and you make yourself vulnerable to people on camera, there's always some people that are just going to hate whatever you have to say, regardless of what it is. Even if you have a channel that's making furniture, there'll be some guy on the video being like, oh, I hate this guy. It's just the nature of the internet. There's always, or they're just doing it for trolling or whatever. And, for me, it was motivating to see actually that, yeah, there was some negative comments, but I actually had some guys reach out to me and say, hey man, really like your content. Here's what I'm doing. And I had one young guy send me these videos of himself. And he's like, I was really inspired by what you're saying. Here's what I'm doing. I have bought a 1/4 acre plot of land with my mates, for $5,000 or something. Here's our potatoes that we've planted. Here's me doing MMA. Here's me training. Here's me training jiu-jitsu on my land that I bought with my mate. And I'm like, that is what we need. We don't need more people. There's this meme going around. I don't know if you've seen it, where it's like, there's a bunch of like NPC guys in a forest and someone's going, right, we're about to make our based right-wing system. Who knows how to make a fire? And everyone's like, I don't know, but I've got my copy of Evola. They're all like that. We don't need more people that are talking about theory online. We need people that are going to put a potato in the ground. We need people that are going to train MMA. We need young guys that are actually going to take action, because there's energy behind that. That has energy. And This is like one of the reasons that conservatives interrupt me if you want, because I'm just going to keep ranting otherwise. But
it's okay. It's fine. It's yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. One of the reasons that conservatives have failed so unbelievably badly over the past 70 years, they've literally failed utterly at conserving anything. And the reason that they have is because they adopted their fundamental stratum that they were standing on was flawed from the start because of how the post-World War II order was set up. Not going to go too much into detail of that. Go check out Thomas 777 on Pete Quinones. He explains it really well. But the conservatives are fighting from a fundamentally liberal frame, which means they're guaranteed to lose because they have no energy. They cut themselves off from the one thing that gives our side energy, which is this idea of elitism, this idea of bettering yourself, of being a better man, of being a superior man, of raising yourself up into like a human level above the animal level. Like this is what Nietzsche was talking about when he said about the Uberman. Like this is where the energy of our side is. And the conservatives have failed because they cut themselves up from that. And that's our best weapon against the left. So that is where solutions start, in my view. Sorry, I got a bit carried
absolutely.
Away.
Absolutely. I mean, it's fine. Conservatives have got themselves into this position where, and I agree, it happened a lot. It started a long time ago. Basically, they don't really believe in something. They have a certain they have a certain attitude towards life, which is sort of passive, laissez-faire. Just leave me alone. Do whatever you like, but leave me alone. And eventually, they're in this position now where all they're doing ever is critiquing what their enemies have done or critiquing what their opponents have done.
Purely reactive.
Purely reactive, and actually, mostly they're critiquing whether their opponents have done what they said they would do well enough, or whether they've actually fallen foul of their own liberal principles. So it's just the conservative ends up being trying to be a better liberal than the liberal. I saw Tucker Carlson, a clip of him today. It was rather disappointing. He was moaning about drag queens and whatever, but he started off by saying that he's pro-gay marriage. So I was like, well, what do you actually stand for then?
There's a joke about this in the US where in 5 years' time, the conservatives will be saying, whoa, five tranny school teachers in every school is too much. You know, we think there should only be three tranny school teachers in every school molesting your children. We're not like the liberals.
Exactly.
Of course, we all know that's where it's going. There's no energy in that movement. Like it's a dying movement. It's a purely, all they do is react to the left. They are fundamentally passive individuals. Not everyone is an action taker. I will say the majority of the human population will never take action on their own initiative ever. They need to be told what to do. But there is a fraction of the population that can take action on their own initiative. And these are the types of men that you need. And these are the types of men that inspire the type of men I spoke about previously to take action. And when I'm on my videos talking and when I'm here talking, I'm talking to that type of man. And I'm saying, this is the time that the world needs you. Your people need you to be what you are. They need you to act out this stuff and I know it can seem daunting. It's like, where do I start? The thing is, when you actually ask someone, you say, okay, Woodlander talks about getting off grid, right? He talks about being independent, like food independent, energy independent, that sort of thing. This is what I'm doing personally. I've got a plot of land here in Kentucky. I've got a house on it. I'm going to be moving there with my wife and child. Hopefully, I pray, having a lot more children, raising them away from the POS society, away from the TVs, away from the gay, away from the trans. They'll be outdoors. They'll be working with me young. We've already got one dairy cow. I'm going to be getting more cows. And people say, that's so much. Like, I can't possibly do that. It's like, I didn't know how to do this stuff. But what I did, I just took one step in front of the other. You start with solving the problem that's closest to you. And everyone knows what that is. Everyone knows what it is that they need to do. It's like, what do you need to do next? And you just keep asking the question, and eventually people, I can get a bucket and put earth in it and plant a potato. Even if you live in an apartment in the city with no money, you can do that. And then that action starts to generate momentum in the flywheel, and you can start to build up steam. And you know, who knows where you're going to get, you know, my eventual goals are pretty high flying. Like I want to, you know, it starts with getting my family into this location, starts with getting our little homestead farm up and running. It starts with raising my kids in the way that, in being more of what I would want to see in the world. And then it spreads out to like, okay, what other people can I find that share my worldview? How can I help them come set up near me? How can I vet people to get a really good local community? How can I raise up the men in my local community? How can I make us tight? How can I get involved in local politics? Like, and it builds and builds and builds and builds. And this is how you create real change. It comes from the bottom up, from individual men building up from themselves outwards like this. It doesn't come from the top down. Doesn't work. Like, too many people want a savior figure and someone to blame. And they're stuck in this mindset of blaming someone else for their problems. Oh, I can't get a house because it's too expensive because of Jews, because they messed up the money system. Or, oh, I can't, you know, do this for whatever reason. Like, there's always an excuse. You know, when you're scared to do something, your brain will come up with a reason for you to not do it. It's called creative
absolutely. Avoidance. Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, you know, when I had pretty severe depression for a long time, and this was a huge integral part of it, was that there was always a rationale for doing nothing. Mm-hmm. There was always a rationale for just...
Your brain is amazing. It's an amazing computer. It'll come up with a reason. If you ask it a question, it'll come up with an answer. If you're lazy, it'll come up with a reason why you don't have to do that thing. And what it also is really good at is protecting your ego. So the reason won't be because you're a lazy fat fuck. It won't be because you're a coward. Your brain will say, oh, it's because these people have prevented you from doing it. Or, oh, it's because, oh, it's not the right time. Or, you know, it'll come up with some reason that both protects your ego and conveniently means you don't have to do the hard thing at the same time. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that regardless of your political affiliations or your political ideas, your goals or whatever, that it's still what Golden Age Man is saying here is still valuable advice, because it means that whatever your ideas, it will help you to have more agency, because you can with more agency you can enact whatever ideas you want. So it's certainly better than remaining passive and hoping that other people, anyone else, will intervene on your life.
I'm going to say more than being better than that, it's absolutely essential. Like, that worked up until 2020. Now I think it's become obvious, or it should be obvious, that the path of least resistance, the path of not taking control of your own life, of having no agency, leads directly to the pod and the bugs. That's where it leads. Because if you do nothing, like, you'll get given what you ask for. And if you ask for someone else to manage everything in your life and you do not take responsibility, the universe will grant that to you. You will get it. You might not like it, but you'll get it. So if you want to avoid the pod and the bugs, you have to find a way to have agency and start taking, you know, your responsibility into your own hands. It's just that simple.
Absolutely. And I really liked what you said about starting from, and this was something that I've said many times about getting over depression, is that you start with baby steps. So you don't overburden yourself. But there's another aspect to this, because you said you don't need to know the master plan. You just need to know what to do right now and what to do next and what to do next. And it reminded me of this story of a guy, and I Googled it and I found the guy's name. His name was Kyle MacDonald, a Canadian blogger. And he did this thing. I don't know when exactly. Yeah, from 2005 to actually to 2006. So it was only over the course of just under 1 year that he started off with selling a red paperclip, and then that led, he got something for that, and then he traded that thing, and then he traded that thing, and it, on and on and on, and within a year, it led to a house, a two-story farmhouse. So at each step, he made sure that he traded whatever the thing was for something of greater value. And somehow that worked. I mean, it's an amazing story, but it really is an amazing story. And other people have tried to imitate it, Wikipedia says, with varying degrees of success.
Well, he was the first, wasn't he? It was his idea. That was a novelty of it.
Yeah, yeah. But the point is, that is a very good story. But no one else needs to know that that's what you're doing. It's not like you don't need to tell people, yeah, I'm hoping to emulate Kyle MacDonald. They just need to know about the thing that you're trying to trade them. You know. So I think this is something that it comes back into my life now and then, this story about the paperclip. And I always think I should do that. you know, who knows where it could lead. And yeah, it's just something worth bearing in mind in terms of cumulatively bettering your position over and over again.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've tried to do for like most of my adult life, is just build on what I've done. It's just one problem after the other, like that you just solve. So like right now, my problem is that my house, which I've had built, has mold on the bottom because like it hasn't had the way they build houses here is you put down a concrete foundation and then you put the house on top of it. And it's still like got a crawl space underneath. So what's happened is because nobody's living in the house, it's cold in there, but it's warm in the crawl space. So it's like made condensation and they got all the mold. So the problem I'm solving right now is how do I get rid of the mold problem? It's like, okay, well, I need to get something to seal the water. So I need to go and buy some plastic and I need to put the plastic down and then I need to spray the mold and clean it off. Like it's just mundane stuff like that. But if you stack it, if you just keep stacking, like relentless execution is every day. What is my goal? What am I going to do today to work towards it? It builds into this like unbelievable levels of change. And this is how you actually make change. This is how you actually get things done. It's this process of transmutation of thought into action. And I really, if I can get one point across to people in this stream, Colin, it's this, that I want people to start filtering everything they take in, every bit of content, through the lens of what action does this help me take? Because you can sit there for 8 hours a day consuming content, and you can get blackpilled about the WEF and, oh, they're going to bring in social credit and, oh, I'm not going to have power this winter and blah, blah, blah. You can get blackpilled about all this stuff. If you take no action, it's exactly the same as if you consume no content at all. In fact, it's probably worse, right?
People should definitely be looking to actively. I mean, I'm not saying that constantly, but every day it would be ideal to be doing something to better.
If you do one small thing every day, and it can be like something so small, like just make a phone call or like send an email or something. Like, but if you do, that's what I found helps me. If you do one small thing every day, it helps to build the momentum. And like one of the things that really helps as well is, like for a lot of people, this stuff starts in the gym. And I know it's like people are like, why are you talking about the gym when we're talking about like solving political problems? I'm like, no, the political problems get solved starting here. It starts in here and it comes outwards. It doesn't start out there and come inwards. That's not how this world works. So you make it good and right in yourself first, and that will come out of you and make your local world good and true and beautiful. And then that will start spreading outwards as you make more people like think like you. So, you know, for me, I've seen a lot of men turn their lives around by going to the gym. And, you know, a lot of men see that as something like a real insurmountable obstacle, but you just have to take it one step at a time. It's like, sometimes I don't want to go to the gym and I'm like, well, can I put my shoes on? Okay, yeah, I can put my shoes on. It's like, all right, well, now I've got my shoes on. Can I walk to my car? Like, it's only a minute. I can walk to my car. All right, I'm in my car. Well, can I? I might drive to the gym, and then I can always come home if I don't want to go in. All right, I'll drive there. And by the time you get there and you're in the gym, and then you start, like, you're already there. So it's just like a lot of people psych themselves out of doing anything because they think it's going to be like this huge thing that's like impossible to tackle. And you just got to break it down to like the next thing. But I mean, we can start getting into more like concrete things, because I feel like I've talked quite a lot about abstract here. I don't know.
Yeah, sure, go for it. Yeah, you're okay. Just to let people know where the sort of itinerary here is: empowering yourself, self-agency, and having a practical mindset. That's what we're going to be tackling.
Oh, all right, good. I am on topic then. I was worried that I drifted off. So like I'll just outline like my strategy for what could, because people, you know, people say, okay, well, what should I do then? What do I do? Okay, here's what I think you should, you know, what I think people should be doing, what I'm doing. I'm trying to lead by example. I think a two-pronged approach to our problem. One of the prongs of this approach is what I'm doing, which is like making a family. Okay, because we talk about great replacement. We talk about massive waves of non-white immigrants coming into white countries. We talk about low white birth rates. So what, you know, that's all terrible. What can you as a man do to fix that? Well, you can have babies. Seems quite straightforward to me. I can have white children. All right. So like, this is actually how, like, I'm an engineer. So I think in this really logical way. And like, you know, at the start of COVID, I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to get a wife and I'm going to have a family. And that seems like the obviously right way to do it. So that's what I did. So just executing on that. But, you know, that, so the one prong of this is like the sort of the home base approach, right? So that means having a family, having a large family, raising your kids away from the pos and the gay and the miscegenation and all the garbage that propaganda that is the mainstream. And every time you go outside, you'll be bombarded with this stuff. You know, if you turn on a TV, it's just interracial couple and it's like love the immigrants and like white people bad and just constant. It's poison. Like, you've got to get your kids away from that stuff and raise them with a firm foundational set of moral values, raise them to be hardworking, good people that are loyal to their people, right? And then, you know, maybe some people in this generation aren't going to make it. I think a lot of them aren't, unfortunately. But, you know, and there's not very much that can be done about that. But you can start with the next generation and you can raise them and, you know, raise them to be like one of the greatest generations that there's ever been. I really believe this. Like, the internet has given us the tools to do it. So there's the thing. Have a family and try to reduce your dependence on the system. Like, you don't want the system to be able to force you to comply with some nonsense. Like, so that means homeschooling. That means, you know, in my mind, developing strong local community connections. So I get most of my meat, for example, from a local farmer who's like a family connection through my wife here. You know, and like and if I'm going to employ someone to help me, like do like my general contractor who's managing my house build, I will find a local guy to do that and build a strong relationship with him. Like, the basic things like that. You can start sourcing your food from like local farmers and things and get interested in like growing your own food. So what I'm interested in is in cattle farming. I've got 80 acres of land and you can raise a few cattle on that. So I've started off with one dairy cow and I'm going to increase it. Colin, I don't know anything about raising cows, you know, so it would be so easy for me to talk myself out of it and be like, oh my goodness, it's a huge animal. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, but I will figure it out. I'll go on YouTube and like how to keep cows and then just like, all right. And then just muddle through it, you know, and slowly build the experience. And I think anyone, you know, almost anyone can learn to do things like that. So I think it looks like being more self-sufficient, but not just your own individual self. It's sort of like more dependent on your local area, on people you know and trust, rather than dependent on this amorphous bureaucratic blob that you have no control over. So I think that this is sort of fairly summed up in a propaganda image by the sort of picture of like the trad cottage or whatever. And it's like the nice white family in front of it and then the rolling hills and everything. That's actually a really attractive image, by the way. Like, if you're a guy listening to this, I assume most of the people listening to this are probably men, and you're looking for, you want to find a white woman I assume they're mostly white men. That's probably just an assumption. You want to find a woman of the same race as you to be your wife. Like, women are really attracted to this idyllic image of like, I've got my house in the country. Here's, you know, we're just living our own quiet life. Like, we're growing vegetables and stuff. Like, that's why this cottagecore nonsense is all over Twitter. Like, women are actually really attracted to that stuff. So if you can show yourself, you don't even have to have it all. Like, I know people say, oh, I don't have enough money to buy land or whatever. Well, there's ways around that. And I think The Woodlander goes into a lot of detail about specific ways that you can set this sort of thing up, even if you have very small amount of resources. I think he does a good job of that. So I'm not going to cover that too much, but even if you show that you're working towards something like that, like, this is my vision. Here's my potato field, which I did with some mates. It cost us £2,000. Like, then you'll attract a woman that like thinks like you. Like, lots of women hate the system as well. Like, they hate the brown tranny gay stuff, and they love the idea of having kids and a family and living on a homestead or something, right?
So yeah. I mean, it's really something where they're far more malleable than men politically. I think women.
Yeah. You don't need to find one. You don't need to find one that's super red pilled. Like, you don't need to find one that's super red pilled or anything. Like, you know, I would say probably find one that's not vaxxed if you're not vaxxed. I actually personally, I think that's important. But so that's the one arm of the strategy, which is like the home based strategy. It's like, you have to build a safe place to be able to. And when I had a child, I had my wife gave birth to our first child, a baby girl, 8 months ago. And when she, you know, even starting when she got pregnant, but when she gave birth, especially, there she is in the background now. She knows I'm talking about her. My mind shifted gears into a much longer term mindset because I'm like, this is my baby girl. She's going to be growing up in a world. If I do nothing, she is going to grow up in a world where she's hated for the color of her skin. She's enslaved to international finance. She's forced to, I don't know, she might be forced into prostitution or something just to pay the bills. I don't want that for my girl. And I will fight with every fiber of my being to prevent that being her future. That's why I'm online. Like there's no, I don't get any, I mean, I don't know if you probably don't either, but it's like, you don't get much benefit from coming online and saying the things that we do. You get banned from platforms.
It's difficult. Yeah.
You get banned from platforms. People hate you for it. One of the least popular messages is the types of things that we say, right? So it's not like we're doing this like for cheap clout or likes or cash or really. It's not like that. I'm doing it because I deeply care about my little girl and my family and extending into my people. And I want a better future for them. And so if I don't do like, here's the thing. I imagine that in 20 years time, when my girl is, you know, and imagine the worst case scenario, let's say 1 million immigrants a year, extrapolate that 30 years, imagine the worst case scenario. I don't have to describe it in detail. Everyone can imagine what that looks like. And then your little baby girl has been raped and she comes to you and says, Daddy, why didn't you do anything to stop it? What are you going to say to her? Like, what am I going to say to my girl if she says that? Oh, I was sorry. I was too busy watching Netflix. What? Like, no, I can't do that. I have to do everything I can and get as many other people to see things the way that I see them, which I think is the truth, so that that future can be avoided. So anyway, there's a long-winded rant, but that's the one arm of the thing, is to build a home base that is sort of distanced from the system a bit and start to build our own culture. All right.
I think the matter of land is important. It's worth going into this just on its own because nowadays, a lot of people don't. I mean, a lot of people rent. A lot of people live at home with their parents still. A lot of people are on the dole. The idea of having land is very alien to people. I think they don't. A lot of folk don't realize. Like our ancestors, or even our great grandparents would have known instinctively. It's useful to own land, basically. But for us, it doesn't really come up because society has become so advanced that people think about buying a house in suburbia, getting a job at that corporation, and this sort of thing. It's very abstracted. But the truth is that having land gives you freedom from a lot of things. Tremendous. It gives you options. Freedom. You can do what you want with the land, and it's an asset.
Actually, unfortunately, in England, that's not quite true. Like the bureaucracy around land management in England is unfortunately very stifling.
I was wondering if that was partly why you moved to America.
I moved to America because my wife is American, and when she got pregnant, we decided it would be best for her to be with her family. For a whole number of different reasons, which anyone with a pregnant wife would probably understand. But having come here, I can see, like, it is easier in America. This is why I get super frustrated with Americans, because they have no idea what they have. I came from England. I grew up in Surrey, in southeast England. I went to a grammar school there and everything. My parents had a house and a bit of land, not very much, maybe like less than a quarter of an acre, I think, but it was still like rural and very nice. And I got to grow up in that environment. And although I didn't appreciate it at the time, now looking back on it, I'm extremely grateful that I had the gift, the blessing of that upbringing. It was really good. You need to ask permission from the local council to put up a shed. It's insane and ridiculous. It's really annoying. My brother's having the same issue right now because he's sort of wanting to do the same thing that I'm doing. But it is harder in England, but I'm never going to say that something is impossible. There's always a way, and I can see that there's a way because the Woodlander has done it. Dan Fergin has done it. The Fergin has done it. I've seen these people do it, and they didn't, it's not like they inherited millions of dollars from mummy and daddy, They did that on their own back. I mean, I've done it in America. I will say America is easier, but this is exactly the type of thing that we were talking about earlier, where people will come up with an excuse not to do something. And they'll be like, oh, I'm in England, so I can't because of the planning permission's too hard, land's too expensive. So I can't do it. Yes, you can. And I'm going to keep hammering on the example of this guy who I know who's 21. And I'll send you the video afterwards so you can see the one they sent me. But he's 21 years old, no special resources. And he clubs together with his mates to get a small plot of land to plant potatoes, right? And you can do that working at Sainsbury's if you just are disciplined about it and you have good character and you find some other like-minded people. Like, there's always a way to do it, you know? And I actually think this stuff is going to get easier, not harder, because although the bureaucracy is becoming more stifling, it's also becoming more incompetent. So their actual ability to enforce all this stuff is getting worse and worse. And I have a very, very pessimistic outlook for the economy generally, but particularly for Europe and England. I think, you know, everyone there is in for a really rough ride over the next decade or so. As people get really much, much poorer, I think we'll find how much someone cares whether you put a shed up or not on your land is going to be much, much less. That's my gut feeling on it.
Yeah, I would agree. It seems likely. Again, it's a symptom of luxury that to have a bureaucracy that can care about things like that is not likely if things are tough. They're going to be concentrating on far more important things than that.
Another really good reason for local community, local networking, if you know your five closest neighbors and you're all buddies with them and you go hunting with them and have beers with them and you say, oh, I'm going to put up another house here. Do you mind? And they say, no one's going to report it. No one needs to know. No problem. Like, this is kind of the way that I think people need to start thinking. And I know it's an alien way because we're so used to following the rules and living in this sort of broad society that functions because everyone follows the rules. And now the rules are like stifling and the society is not functioning. So it's time to like, this is something else that I hammer on with on my channel as well. It's like, people really struggle to break out of this law abiding mindset. The English people are very law abiding people, which I think you mentioned earlier. But the difference is that there's a distinction between the law and legal code. Legal code is invented by men in the government. Law is defined by God. And law, you cannot break without consequences. Legal code, there is no moral problem with working around that however way you want to. You know, it doesn't, I think. So people really struggle because they're like, that's against the rules. Here's an example. In Kentucky, you're supposed to go to the local permit office and get a permit to dig a hole on your land. Nobody does it. Nobody. Because it's ridiculous. And everybody knows that nobody does it. So everyone breaks that law and nobody cares. I didn't even know about it until some lady at the government told me about it, like just because I was calling out for something else. So if you try to follow all these things, like, you're just going to have throw it away. Like, law is simple. Follow God's law and do your best you can to avoid running afoul of the authorities. That's the way you start having to think about it. Because if you chain yourself to the legal demands of the system, they'll demand you get vaccinated, demand you put on a mask, they'll demand all this insane stuff. Like, you got to learn to sort of start weaving through that, you know, a bit. And that's not, people think that's immoral, and it's not, because morality comes from God. Morality comes from God's law. Like, I know not everyone sees that. There's pagans that watch this probably, but they would have a similar concept. It's natural law, right?
Sorry, there's been a super chat here. Someone, okay. Defiant Irishman, is saying, if anyone listening buys any land, do not sign up with any government or EU schemes. You will get paid for sure, but you lose a lot of your control and freedom. And that's worth knowing, government and EU schemes. And he also says, buy a small cow, an Angus or a Frisian cross. They are easier handled. Don't buy into the Dexter fad. They are nice and small and produce good meat and milk, but they are mad yokes. Also, don't get talked into thinking you need a shed for winter. Most cows are fine in the wind and the rain.
Great advice. Thank you, mate. I appreciate that. Well, we actually, our heifer is a mini Jersey. So she's a dairy cow. And we drink a lot of raw milk, my family, and especially my baby girl. You know, she's weaned off of breast milk now, but we feed her she's very, very heavy raw cow's milk in her diet. And also like some other solid foods a little bit, we're getting her into those. So we consume a lot of raw milk. And then here's me thinking, okay, well, what if I'm prevented from, I get all my raw milk from a local farmer who I know really well. Well, what if she moves? You know, what if she goes out of business and I can't get raw milk to feed my girl? So, okay, I'll get a heifer, and it's a mini Jersey. So they're quite small and easy to handle. So sounds like that was the right choice.
Yeah. I guess it's different advantages, pluses and minuses. I can understand that. It's something you'd want to look into before you make a decision. So I interrupted you when you were in the middle of talking about empowering yourself and self-agency. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that?
Yeah, I remembered earlier when I was talking about a two-prong people, there's like, what can you do? Here's the two prongs. I think we've covered like the first prong, which I like the home base, the family, homeschooling, building culture, becoming more locally self-reliant, that sort of thing. The other prong, which I'm not an expert on, I believe is activism, and it's almost entirely for young men. So there's a thing that people call online activism. I suppose that's sort of what we're doing now. Online activism is much, much, much less effective than real life activism for a whole number of reasons. And the reason that people, not many people that do real life activism, is because it's hard and you have to go outside and talk to other people. And unfortunately, a lot of guys, especially young men, find that sort of thing quite difficult and quite scary. And they're much happier like posting stuff online, typing online and being in the online bubble than they are actually going out and meeting real people and joining an activist group. The types of activist group I'm talking about are things like, in the UK, you have, who is it? It's Mark Collett and the really nice lady who sells tea. Laura Towler. Yeah, I love that. Like patriotic alternative is so lovable. Like they're like, oh, we just sell tea and like want to have a nice time and have our nice family. I think that's such good. They're really doing good branding. I know the situation in the UK is more difficult because there's a lot like the hate speech laws in the UK are extremely posed and gay. Like that. Another great thing about being in America is that you do still have this sort of the veneer of free speech, let's say. And the other thing is that a lot of Americans have, more importantly than the veneer of it, a lot of Americans still have the actual, like they've deeply internalized the concept of free speech. And it's quite difficult for the government to steamroller that, especially if you move to some of the rural areas of America where they absolutely hate the government and they don't want anything to do with it. And they're very insular, which I like. So, in the UK, Patriotic Alternative, they do hikes and activism. They go out and do banner drops and stickering. This sort of thing is what young men should be getting involved with. And I think you can build more on that. I think you should be doing training with your guys. You'd go and build brotherhood, build like a sense of tribe with other young men. Go and do. And the only way you can do that is by going outside and doing joint activities together. That is how men bond with each other, is by doing real world things side by side together. They say that women bond face to face because they talk to each other. Men bond side by side because they do stuff together. So like that's kind of like that I think is a really good outlet for young men. And it's also, it will level you up, because it will make you braver, because going out and doing pro-white activism, it requires some bravery. It does, because you could have some crazy loon like come up. People are going to, you know, it's just going against every social norm in everyone's head. People are going to think you're Nazis. They're going to think you want to, you know, you're about to do another Holocaust. You know, people are going to come and scream at you. It doesn't always happen, but it does sometimes happen. Like I have done some activism here in Kentucky. I've done some stuff with White Lives Matter. And it does take some bravery, but that bravery will, that is like, it's like the resistance is the way. Do you know? Like if you can't put a sticker somewhere saying, I support my own people, if you can't even do that step, like we are lost. And frankly, if the majority, you know, if the masses of white people can't even put up a sticker to say like, no, we're proud and we have a right to be here. Like, I don't think it's are we even worth saving? You know, at that point, do you see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I do. I mean, it's an awkward topic because a lot of people have a lot to lose, and the authorities. Yes. I mean, there was a thing a few years ago, the 100-handers, and that ended up, you know, people were being questioned for being involved with that, and other sicker campaigns as well. The authorities are very keen to crack down on this stuff.
Yes, and, absolutely. Do nothing illegal.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do nothing illegal. That's the trick to it. Like a lot of people will, like a very common meme on the right. I think that the feds most important, most effective weapon ever was propagating this idea that doing any kind of action, anyone that advocates any kind of action is a Fed. That's the most effective thing they've ever done, because it gave everyone an excuse to do absolutely nothing and put everyone in a state of paranoia. Listen, if someone is not advocating anything illegal, they just want to go and have a beer with another guy that thinks like them, accusing them of being a Fed is just plain cowardice. And you're right, though. I do have some sympathy with those people that say they have something to lose. People have families, things like that. That's why I advocated the first fork of the path, which is the home base. So for older men who have built up a career and they have a family and they have something to lose, right, I would advocate focusing more on the home base type of action that I advocated earlier. But when you're a 21-year-old guy, you don't really have anything to lose. And if you don't do anything illegal, you're not going to go to jail. And most importantly, if you don't do it now, it's not going to be any easier in 10 years. And it's not going to be any easier in 20 years. So when are you going to do it? That's the question. And it's like, the resistance is the way. Yes, it's hard. Yes, you might have something to lose. So let me tell you a story about some things that I personally lost on this sort of journey that I've been on, right? I had a great job in London in 2019. I was head of engineering at a software firm. I had quite a good position. I was making six-figure salary, like really nice, really cushy, okay? I didn't have to work very hard. I was a manager. And I was in charge of hiring engineers. Now, if you've worked in software engineering, you'll know that in England, in software engineering, 99% or more of the competent candidates are white males, because white men are really good at engineering. They tend to be they're just really good at it. And there's just, you know, there's just like, just because of the way the demographics are, that's just how the numbers come out. So I was hiring purely based on merit. I would hire the people that I thought would be best at the job. And I'm very fair-minded about this. I'm not going to bring my personal racial views into work with me. I'm going to do my best for my employer, which I believe is in hiring the person that has the most merit for the job. And I slowly came under more and more pressure because the rest of the company was getting more and more diverse. And our engineering team in the corner was just standing out as this group of white guys, right? So my boss started making hints to me. And eventually she came to me and she said, look, I've tried to make hints. I've tried to get across to you what I want, but you obviously haven't understood. So I'll just make this very, very plain. The next person you hire will be black or a woman. And I said, wait, so I shouldn't be hiring the best person for the job? Well, they have to be black or a woman because we need more diversity. I said, well, I'm not going to do that because that betrays my professional principles. And she said, I'm not asking, I'm telling. So I went home that night and I thought about it. And I thought about it a lot. And I've done a lot of reading and I've read a lot of fiction in my life. I've read a lot of books. And I thought, this is one of those moments, isn't it? Where the main character of the story has to decide whether he's going to take the materially comfortable path or whether he's going to take the path that he knows to be right, but comes with pain. So I went in the next day and I said, no, I can't do this. And I don't want to work somewhere where I'm forced to make these kind of decisions. So I walked away from that job. And walking away from a six-figure salary is not an easy thing to do. But I did it anyway. And the thing is, when that's called having principles. And when you take a stand on your principles like that, what you'll find is it's a test. And the moment you get past the test, everything immediately gets better for you. And that's exactly what happened to me. I had a new job within a month that paid me twice as much and didn't require me to do any diversity nonsense. So it was a total upgrade. And if I would have gone with the fear path, if I would have stayed there, if I would have cucked and said, oh, you know what? Well, I'll try to work within the system. You know, I'll just hire one black guy just to get my boss off my back and I'll go back to it. And it's blah, blah. You can always rationalize these things. If I would have done that, I would still be stuck in London. I'd still be stuck in that job. I would be miserable and I would have no self-respect because I hadn't stood up for my principles. So what I would, you know, you said, it's hard for people to do it. It's hard for people to stand up because they have a lot to lose. My counter argument to that is you'll lose more by not standing up, because when you stand up for your principles and do what is right, God rewards you. I've seen it happen to my friends as well. I've seen one of my friends who had a very similar experience was canceled from his industry for saying the truth and went on to new heights and, you know, is crushing now.
That's amazing. That's a great story. I mean, I applaud you. It is true that sticking to your principles can often be very painful. But the reward obviously is self-respect. And sometimes you get other rewards as well. In your case, you did. That's great. Would you say that that's a problem that... How would you persuade someone to get over that fear? Because, you know, it's a matter of, you know, it might not have worked out well for you there.
Yeah,
you know, you see what I mean?
The only way I know of is to have a faith in God, to have a faith in a higher power. It says in the Bible 365 times, be not afraid. Trust the Lord. So that was, I wasn't a full Christian back then. I was kind of like, just had inklings in the back of my mind, and I had a feeling about my belief, but I wasn't sure what it was yet. But I did have faith that if I did the right thing and I acted principled, it would work out for me. That I had faith. That's all I can say. And you can't persuade everyone, like, because the majority of people will bend to material pressure. And, you know, I do have some sympathy for that, but as time goes on, I have less and less sympathy for that, because that is the definition of being a slave. And that leads to slavery. Like, ultimately, the question you have to, you know, you have to really decide within yourself, would I rather live and preserve my skin as a slave, or would I rather die free? And like, if you cannot be afraid of dying free, then you won't be afraid of anything else that comes up. So that's how I got through it. But I think other people need to find their own way. But the type of society that I want to live in can't come from a savior figure swooping in and fixing everything for everyone. It comes from individual men finding that courage within themselves. Because the type of society I want to live in is a society that is populated entirely by men, or led entirely by men that have that kind of courage, that have the courage to stand on their principles. These are the types of men that built Europe. These are the types of men that built the British Empire. These are the types of men that did all of the great things that we love about our people. It was these types of men. They didn't accomplish all that stuff just because they were born white. They did it because they had faith and in a higher power, and they valued their principles higher than their material, than the material. So absolutely. I don't know if I would persuade someone to do it. If it like, is it in you or not? And the thing is, here's the thing, you know, this is the most persuasive argument I can make, is that society is schisming. And the two sides are getting further and further away. And on one side, you've got the people that will keep compromising to keep, you know, to keep the lights on and keep having a comfortable life and keep Netflix running and keep their fridge full. Keep compromising, keep compromising, keep compromising. Little compromise after little compromise. Oh, I get the jab. Oh, I couldn't. Oh, you know, I had to do it because my family. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Right. And on the other side, you've got the men that refuse and said no, and said, I believe in a higher principle than that. I value my bodily integrity higher than this, and I'm willing to risk losing my job over it. And this group is getting further and further away. And you need to decide which one of those groups you want to be in. Which type of men do you want to be surrounded by? Do you want to be surrounded by the ones that will compromise their morals and rat out their neighbor to save their own skin? Or do you want to be surrounded by the ones that will die for their principles? I think that should be an obvious answer, right, for most people. But it's a free will choice.
Yeah, and it's very clear that the system we live under is trying to get everyone to be fearful and weak and pliable. And that's really... And that will drive you towards the pot in the end.
Yes, they control you with fear. Yeah. But the reality of the thing is almost never as bad as the fear of it. It's like the fear is one of those things where it's like a gremlin, it's like a ghoul. And if you run away from it, the shadow gets bigger and bigger and bigger and scarier, and it gets big jaws and teeth. But if you run towards it, it shrinks down. And when you finally get there, it's actually just a tiny little gnome. You can just kick it over. Like that's how it works when you're afraid of things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fear is a terrible thing. I mean, it paralyzes. And as you say, in the end, the fear is worse than the thing that you're fearing, usually. Yeah, for different reasons.
Have you ever read Dune, Colin?
Dune? No.
Oh, there's a great thing in Dune, which I like, called The Litany Against Fear. And it goes like this. I might butcher this a bit, but it's something like, I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total annihilation. I will face my fear. I will allow my fear to pass over and around and through me. And then when it is passed, I will turn my inner eye to see where it went, and there will be nothing left. It's something like that. And I read Dune when I was quite a young man, And that really stuck in me. And then I'm like, okay, if I run up against something that I'm afraid of, I'm not going to run away from that. I'm going to run towards it. I'm going to attack it. You attack the things you fear. And you keep doing that over and over again. It's like a muscle. It gets easier and easier. You start with small things. It gets easier and easier the more you do it. And then you end up being able to do it with big things.
Oh, absolutely. As I said before, baby steps. Start with baby steps, build up. And it is quite amazing. All right, well, Kate, let's leave it there, unless there's anything else that you want to say about this.
I covered it pretty well. Thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's a great honor. And I absolutely love the other, I've watched quite a few of the other episodes you've done. I think they're really, really good, man. It's like, I watched a bit last year, but I think this year is something special.
Oh, thanks very much for saying that. I'm never quite sure how it's going until about halfway through when you can start to gauge, you know. So, I think it's going well. So I'm glad you're enjoying it. So, okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Golden Age Man, for appearing on Millennial.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be back in 10 minutes with Horace. So I will see you then. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. T-shirts and mugs and other wondrous gifts are available in the merchandise store. Impress your family, friends, colleagues, and business partners with these incredible items. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show. And spread the word.
All right.